So inflation can affect a lot of countries in a lot of different ways. But what do higher prices mean for a country like India?
It's not good. It's not good because a large percentage of the consumption basket is food.
Welcome to this IMF podcast. In today's program, we look at India's latest economic review and how it's rolling with the punches.
So the challenge of the central bank is to support the economic recovery while not losing track of inflation. Because in a country like India, that has a particularly adverse social impact. My name is Luis Brewer. I'm the senior resident representative of the IMF to India, Nepal, and Bhutan.
So, you know, most countries are struggling to get their economies back on the rails through this pandemic. And the problems of one country have repercussions, obviously, on neighboring countries and entire regions in some cases. How does what's going on in India's economy fit into the global recovery?
Well, India is a very important member of the global community. It's a very large country. It has it's the second most populous country in the world, and it has a large economy. So what happens in India has a big impact both in the region and in the world. In fact, India is responsible for about 7% of world growth. And of course, the population is close to 20% of the global population. So when you talk about India, you're talking about a large slice of humanity and the global economy.
Mm-hmm. And you've been working in the region for years now. What's it been like to live and work in India during this pandemic?
I have been living in India for about 2 years, and it really is a fascinating experience. I have never lived or worked in a country that was so complex, so diverse, so interesting as India. India is a collection of cultures. Many have different histories, different languages, sometimes different religions. So it is really a large portion of humanity, and you see everything here that you see in mankind. You see extreme excellence, whether it's the scientists, the engineers, the chemists, and you see some deep challenges that mankind is facing, including the impact of climate change, including the need for societies to address sustainable development and create high-quality jobs to absorb the very large number of young men and women that join the labor market every year. So India really is very representative of what's happening around the world. And I had never in the past experienced a country like this. It's quite a intense and fascinating experience.
Yeah, and what do you think? You know, the crisis obviously has been difficult for everyone, but different cultures have different reactions to it. Like India, for example, depends a lot on the informal economy. Is this something, do you think, that they're having trouble dealing with in terms of, getting through this pandemic?
Well, the pandemic has been particularly rough on India for many reasons. And when you look at the economic costs, the gross domestic product fell last year by 7.3%. That is huge. And it's huge in a country that has a rising population, a majority of young people, and a very large informal labor market. Mm. So not only was the shock very strong, but the impact varied across sectors. And as you mentioned, small firms and the informal sector was particularly badly hit. So this has been a very rough time for India. Having said that, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel because India is recovering. It has controlled the horrible second wave of COVID that took place in April and May of this year. And so cases have fallen from over 400,000 per day. Wow. To under 20,000. The economy is recovering. We estimate that the gross domestic product will expand by 9.5% this year and 8.5% next year, which is one of the highest growth rates of any large economy. Granted, it is from a low base, but the economy is recovering, and that gives hope. Obviously, we can't lower our guards. There's a lot of uncertainty about COVID and about mutations and about vaccination rates and so forth. But so far, things have gotten much better to a very difficult situation that was in the country a few months ago.
So while India is a major producer of vaccines, I mean, that the Serum Institute of India is one, if not the largest vaccine manufacturer in the world and exports to COVAX. A lot of other countries depend on that. But more than 32 million people have been infected with the virus. As you just said, it's diminishing, but it's still pretty dramatic. That's the second highest in the world behind the U.S. How is India doing now in terms of getting people vaccinated? And to what extent is its ability to do that weighing on its economic outlook?
Well, vaccination rates are very important for the economic outlook. And as the economy is gradually recovering, we also see that there's been tremendous progress in the vaccination rates in India. In April of this year, the government sort of took over the distribution, the national government, of vaccines and pushed private companies to ramp up production. And you're seeing the results of those efforts today. So vaccination rates have increased significantly in the last 2 or 3 months. And over a billion doses wow, have been administered. Now, of course, India is a very large country. They need to administer perhaps another billion. And these are very, very large numbers. Yeah. But the country is making progress. The production of vaccines has increased more than 100% in the last, I would say, 4 months. And so right now, almost 30% of the population has received two doses, and about roughly half of adults have received one dose. Now, that's a huge progress, but again, much is left to do. So India continues to push for vaccinations across the country, and in a also very positive note for other countries, has announced that they would resume vaccine exports after about 6 months when they were forced to stop exports because of the terrible second wave that hit this country, starting in March in Mumbai and then extending to the whole country in the following weeks and months.
That's interesting and encouraging. One thing that jumped out at me in this review is the emphasis on the importance of student support, not only to improve education outcomes, but to, and I'm quoting here, minimize adverse labor market implications. I get the education outcomes part of it, but how does the labor market fit in with student support?
In India, public education at the school level is largely in the hands of states. The central government provides guidelines, provides funding, but the actual delivery of free public education at the school level is the responsibility of states. What we have seen is that since March of last year, most schools, and at one point, all schools were closed. And this had a very negative impact on young people, on kids, particularly of low-income groups, because they not only obtain an education at public schools and learn the basic tools to continue learning, like reading, math, and so forth, but they receive meals at school. So there is a risk of a nutritional consequence of the schools being closed for so long. And while states have begun to reopen schools a few weeks ago, it's still gradual, it's still part-time, And this is an issue that may require further interventions to avoid permanent scarring. In other words, having a generation of kids that don't have the tools to survive in a ever more complex economy and world.
So every country, again, is experiencing supply chain disruptions. What's the story in India? I mean, we hear a lot about, these days anyway, energy shortages. How is India being impacted by these supply chain disruptions?
I think India has been, like many, many other countries, affected. And the sector perhaps that has seen the largest impact is in logistics and shipping. The costs of shipping have increased quite significantly. And despite this, Indian exports have recovered quite strongly in the last few months. Nonetheless, the shipping and transportation headwinds are a risk to the continued expansion of exports. On the energy issue, India imports virtually all of the oil it consumes. So the higher oil prices will affect the economy, growth, inflation, and so forth. But on the coal front, I think that what's happening there is less an issue of COVID than shocks to both supply and demand. Supply at the international level, where India does import quite a large amount of coal, and produces its own. And there have been some heavy rains, unusual rains, in some coal-producing regions in India that have disrupted the supply. But I don't think that at least the domestic coal industry challenges currently are COVID-related. But obviously, they feed into the overall supply chain disruptions. And there's a lot of talk of an energy crisis here, but there's no evidence. And so far, there's been no reduction in the supply of electricity or any other source of energy.
Inflation is also a growing concern globally, with higher food prices being one of the bigger worries for some countries anyway. What do higher food prices mean for a country like India?
It's not good. It's not good because a large percentage of the consumption basket is food. And therefore, this affects people's budgets in an important way, and particularly the more vulnerable members of society. And so what we have seen in India is that COVID did lead to higher prices, including because of food. Now, in the last 2 or 3 months, this has begun to reverse. So inflation has fallen from roughly 6% to under 5% last month, in large part because of lower food prices. Now, we have other measures of inflation besides consumer price index, and that is core inflation, which is the average change of prices when you take out food prices and energy prices. And that measure of inflation has been quite sticky in India at around slightly below 6%. So while India has done a lot to reduce the double-digit inflation rates of previous years, it does have an inflation situation that is higher than, say, the global average, and that is a matter that the central bank, the Reserve Bank of India, is monitoring closely with a view of making sure that their policies can, on the one hand, support the economic recovery, which started quite strongly at the beginning of this year, but then slowed down with the second wave and is again resuming since, I would say, July. So the challenge of the central bank is to support that recovery while not losing track of inflation, because in a country like India, that has a particularly adverse social impact.
And so just to conclude, different countries have different priorities at this point, and things, as you just sort of laid out there, how things can change very quickly. What do you suggest in this report that might help India navigate its way through the pandemic and beyond the pandemic?
I think what the report tries to do is to present a constructive outside opinion of how India was impacted by COVID and provide an assessment of the policy reaction, what the government did in response to COVID. Hmm. And in the conversation with the authorities, which are the backdrop of the report, we also discussed different scenarios because there is tremendous fog in the air. It's very hard to see the future. Mm. There's a lot of uncertainty. And so we cannot rule out future waves. There's no evidence of a third wave in India. The cases have been falling for a long time, and they're much lower than before. Vaccination rates have gone up. But we have seen that in other countries that also had similar situations of lower cases and rising vaccines, you've had the appearance of new waves, including from this very contagious Delta variant. So in that context, we did discuss with the authorities different scenarios and exchange ideas on what to do if a third wave were to materialize. Again, there's no evidence. The chances of it happening are probably not very high. But it is not a situation that can be ruled out. So what we try to do is in a respectful and professional way to bring in this international perspective, to look at what India has done, share the experience of what other countries have done, and try to brainstorm ideas on possible situations that might arise and how the economic policies ought to respond to these different possible situations.
Luis Brewer, Senior IMF Representative to India, Nepal, and Bhutan. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks, Bruce.
India's latest economic review, or Article 4, as it's known in some circles, is available at imf.org. And look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at imf_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.